Labor Day is traditionally considered the start of the serious election season. Seems weird to me that folks haven't been paying attention until now. But we are just 50 days or so until the election, and folks are sure to be buried in propaganda coming from the candidates, the parties, and the many interest groups that make up the so-called super PACs. So what the heck, let's join the fray. I'm Alan Jennings. By day, most nights, and for that matter, weekends, I'm the executive director of the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley. Once, sometimes twice, even three times a month, I get lucky enough to get a chance to host these shows, thanks to WDIY. My guests tonight are Walt Garvin, who is the chair of the Northampton County Democratic Committee, semi-retired guy, comes out of a gear. Walt, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alan. Pleasure to be here.
And also Tom Carroll, who by day is a practicing attorney in a sole practice in Bethlehem, mostly focusing on defense work, and probably more than just nights and weekends, plenty of his days too, vice chair of the Northampton County Republican Committee. Tom, welcome.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here tonight.
You know, they call you guys party bosses, and, you know, evokes a certain image. What exactly do you do in your leadership positions for the party?
Tom, you want to go first?
Sure. I'm the vice chairman of the Northampton County Republican Committee, and we have basically the committee people across the county, and once every 2 years vote to elect their leadership in terms of who will be the chairman and the vice chairman. And we just recently had a reorganization, and Robert Kerr was actually elected to be the leader of Northampton County Republican Committee, and I was elected as the vice chairman. And
he said you're smarter than he is, so you should be on the show instead of him.
Well, I think he's a pretty smart guy. He's much better with the technology than I am, and he's runs his own business and here in Bethlehem, photography business. What do we do? We focus mostly on local elections as a county committee. So, you know, obviously it's a big year with the national presidential election, but our main goal is to work to get Republicans elected in local elections, school boards, county councils, city council, et cetera.
Well, in addition to that, we have a structure. We have the Democratic Party has 9 organizations around the county in Northampton, and they all meet regularly on a monthly basis, so they have their own committee. I attend all those meetings. So, again, we're trying to interface with the residents, with the citizens down in their own communities to inform them of the issues, introduce them to the candidates so that they have an informed opinion about what's happening in their community. So it's an education, support for our candidates, support for our elected officials, and just have a structure that we can continually communicate the values of the Democratic Party to the citizenry through our members, right? We have committed. So we're elected every 4 years, the year of the governor. So I'm into my third year, where the second year just passed. And, you know, we have a nice, the committee people get elected the same year. So, again, our job is to educate the populace, educate the citizens what's happening door to door, in their own communities and so forth.
Glamour, power, big money.
All volunteer.
Absolutely, all volunteer. In fact, it's just local Republicans or Democrats that have to get on the ballot. A lot of people don't even realize your committee people are elected, and the Republicans and Democrats do things a little bit differently, but Republicans, we get on the ballot in the off-year elections cycle, and in each ward, we have two Republican committee people.
I'm joking about the, you know, blackmail and bribery and extortion and hidden carcasses and all that kind of stuff, obviously. But it does seem to me to be probably about as thankless a volunteer work that you can do. I mean, because you've got people, you know, I mean, somebody who's running for office and has the nerve to put themselves out there is going to have some degree of self-confidence or kind of cockiness. You know, they're not, you know, typically particularly insecure people. They push you around. They've got opinions. you work your tail off for them, and some little thing gets them mad at you, and before you know it, you're an awful person. Why in the world do you do this? I mean, I would thank you both because it's so critically important. But what drives you to be the in a leadership position in your party committee?
Yeah, for me, it's my first rally was JFK. My father took me and my two brothers down to see JFK when he was running, and I can still see that image in my mind's eye: JFK on the back of a convertible, wow, looking directly at us. And then in the 60s and in the 70s, being a true citizen, knowing the issues and being involved, kind of hardwired me for something like this. So, indeed, you're absolutely right that it is, in many ways, a thankless job. But for me, I'm hardwired for it, and it truly is in my DNA. So I'm involved with every campaign. I was a candidate myself in 2009 for Northampton County Council. So I know the rigors of campaigning personally as well. But for me, I'm hardwired for it, and I really enjoy it. And as you stated, it's very important that we have this front line to the citizens. Tom?
Yeah, I think same with me. I've been interested in politics my whole life. I remember being 10 years old when Nixon was being reelected and watching that election, and my parents thinking I was a little bizarre as a 10-year-old watching the Nixon-McGovern election and polling my fellow students as to which candidate they would support. And my parents had to explain to me, well, you know, these kids won't vote. And I said, but, you know, I think we can tell who's going to win because the kids are telling me who they're going to vote for, and they're just repeating what their parents are saying. But I went to college at Penn State and had a foreign service and international politics degree before I went to law school, so I've always sort of been interested in politics. In terms of getting involved at into the party itself as opposed to just, you know, reading and discussing and debating was, I think it really was an economic decision based on me sitting in Bethlehem and watching my taxes go up and the debt go up in the city. And 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, I decided to run for city council. And I was
a Republican in Bethlehem.
Right.
How'd that go for you?
Well, it was interesting. I met a lot of people. I knocked on over 8,000 doors. And actually, I was only a few hundred votes below the person who, you know, there were three open spots, and I was the fourth getter, a couple hundred votes below the third. So I think considering a 3-to-4-to-1 voter registration disadvantage in the city, right, to Republicans, I did fairly well. And certainly met a lot of people and heard a lot of concerns, and it really drove me then to continue to be involved with the local party, which I had never been until that time.
You consider yourself a conservative or a Reagan Republican?
Yeah, that would be fair.
Okay, and Walt, solid liberal?
Oh, I don't shy away from the term liberal, that demonized by the gentleman you just mentioned, Mr. President Reagan. They had a lot of fun doing that, and that's part of their messaging, but I never shied away from it. Didn't have to go to the word progressive, although I embrace that too. But I'm not afraid of the word liberal, and you can say Walt Garvin is a liberal. Proud liberal.
I think if you were talking definitions in terms of conservative, liberal, my mindset is that I believe in limited government, and I believe that our Constitution is a government, a document that was designed to protect the citizens who God gave us our rights, and the government is supposed to protect our rights and not tell us what to do. So that's my mindset in terms of where I go from politically.
Yeah.
The just in the interest of full disclosure, I'm pretty sure this won't shock anybody. I consider myself a liberal. I don't think of myself as a partisan. But again, in the interest of full disclosure, I am a registered Democrat, just to make that really clear. But I do think of myself as a fair guy. And hopefully we can make sure that this is for lack of a better word, a fair fight tonight. I don't want to spend a lot of time on foreign policy. I mean, there's a temptation to spend an hour on foreign policy because it's so important. Let's just get foreign policy out of the way right up front. How would you rate the Obama record on foreign policy, especially in the context of his predecessor?
You want me to go first? Okay. This is Walt Garvin here. Yeah, I don't think it's as important what I think. I think what is more important is what the world thinks, since foreign policy has to do with everyone else in the world and how we deal with them. And I do believe that that President Obama has a great record. People have embraced him, especially, as you mentioned, in light of the previous administration, where sometimes it was a little abrasive. It was our way or the highway. And that didn't necessarily, rub it rubbed some leaders the wrong way. President Obama.
Leaders of foreign countries.
Leaders of foreign countries, certainly. And their citizenry as well. I mean, you can just take a look and see how people embrace the president when he goes to another country. But the previous administration, for whatever reason they chose to do so, they were fairly abrasive when it came to divide and conquer, the coalition of the willing, trying to say, okay, you're not with us. If you're not with us, you're against us. And that doesn't necessarily equate to respect for, again, we try to be fair. The fairness is the main gauge by which you accomplish things. And I think that, again, the world is supporting the president and what he's trying to do, not only from a international point of view, but they see what he's trying to do here in the great United States of America.
Tom Carroll.
I think our foreign policy through many administrations, both Republican and Democrat, has been less partisan in some ways than our domestic politics. And I think that's the way it should be for the most part. And I do find it interesting that Obama really hasn't shifted to any great degree in terms of, like, you know, I know he ran on, I'm going to close Gitmo. He didn't close Gitmo. He wound down the war that was on a timetable to be wound down. And for pretty much the policies have not really changed. I do have some concerns about how he's treated some of our allies, like England and Great Britain, and right now Israel and the leadership in Israel. And obviously, you look at what's going on in the Middle East right now, and you say, you know, they're protesting and they're burning the American flag and they're yelling death to Obama. So, you know, it's concerning, but I don't know that I can be overly critical of a lot of that in terms of Obama. I think that's sort of a bipartisan approach that we always don't do so good at.
I think it's clear to the governments of these states in the Middle East in particular, perhaps with the exception of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, they all support the president. They support the president and his policies, and they stand shoulder to shoulder. The people in the streets do the same thing. There's a radical segment that, you know, will do whatever they need to do, I think, to get attention. But I believe that it's clear that the leaders of these countries, emerging democracies, emerging governments, they support the president, and I think that's important differentiation there.
Tom, my opinion, for what it's worth, is that this president has not touted his record very effectively in the war on terrorism. I've heard folks on the Republican side think that he's been inappropriately boastful. Do you have an opinion on this? Because, I mean, you know, the drones have been amazingly effective at taking out al-Qaeda. We got Osama bin Laden. There hasn't been another terrorist attack. And yet there really hasn't been a lot of bluster that I think has occurred. There hasn't been a battleship appearance, or what was it, an aircraft carrier appearance with mission accomplished on it. How do you feel about that?
I think that he has followed the previous administration's policies in so many ways, in the use of the drones and things like that, that it's hard for him to go out then and tout that to his base, because they were very opposed to all those things.
Uh-huh.
So in a sense, in those things, in terms of the war on terror, I'm concerned that they don't use that term anymore, and they don't want to talk about radical Islam anymore. And that's a concern in terms of how we deal with foreign policy, as far as I'm concerned. But I do believe, in terms of their overarching policies, yeah, they got Osama bin Laden, and they did that by the continued efforts that had been developed over actually 10-year period. And he used the technology that he opposed when he ran. So,
yeah, this is Lehigh Valley Discourse. You're listening to WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. We have on our show tonight Walt Garvin, the chair of the Northampton County Democratic Committee, Tom Carroll, the vice chair of the Northampton County Republican Committee. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. I'm going to try to stay away from asking you to represent your candidates' views in favor as much as I can of talking about the climate and the environment that we've got to work in. Let me ask you to from a candidate's perspective, from having to campaign. What do you believe to be the Achilles heel? If there is a single Achilles heel, what is the Achilles heel of the other party's presidential candidate?
The economy.
The economy.
The
whole thing?
The unemployment rate, which the labor participation rate, which we now know is we have 330 million people in America now or something like that versus what we had in 1980, and if the labor participation rate was the same as it was in 1980, our actual unemployment rate would be 11%. We have 24 million people that are either unemployed or underemployed. We have 43 or 40-something straight months of unemployment over 8%. When Obama said pass the stimulus and it won't ever go above 8% and promised it would be at 5% at this point, these are the real figures that are not just numbers. They impact people. Unemployed, 24 million people unemployed or underemployed, and that is his problem.
Walt Garvin, I've been doing this work for 32 years. This is my fourth recession, and I got to tell you, I've never seen, and it's unprecedented for an economy to stagger along at 8% plus unemployment for going on 5 years.
Right.
It's a heel.
Oh, hey, listen, everybody in our listening audience and beyond is acutely aware of the collapse of the economy in 2008, hemorrhaging hundreds of thousands of jobs every single month, the financial system collapsing. That just didn't happen overnight. There were policies that brought that up to a head. But from that point, the second depression that we were facing, we have recovered. And the stimulus was part of that. For the record, we've had positive private sector job growth for the past 30 months. Is it the best? Is it what everyone would like? No. Are we moving in the right direction? Absolutely right. The economy is the most important thing. Getting people's jobs is the most important thing. And the president is doing a good job with his policies. This thing didn't happen overnight, but we're moving in the right direction. We're moving forward to make sure that people have job opportunities. And the last thing we need to do is go back to the policies that drove us into this crazy, almost unprecedented ditch in the future.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the individual races throughout the region. We're going to talk about some other issues related to the election. You're listening to WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guest tonight, the party bosses, Tom Carroll, the vice chair of the Northampton County Republican Committee, Walt Garvin, the chair of the Northampton County Democratic Committee. Stay with us.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture. From its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Galicia, and Brittany, to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Bringing you music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 on WDIY Allentown listener-supported community public radio.
We're back. That's Woody Guthrie lyrics put to music by Billy Bragg and Wilco. It's a phenomenal album. I'm not here to promote albums, but the song is called "Christ for President," and he goes on to talk about Jesus, being his policies sounding an awful lot like the kinds of positions that Woody Guthrie would take. But it also kind of evokes the question of you got to be perfect in order to. I mean, why would anybody put themselves out there? I mean, every one of us has got something in our past that we don't want people to know about. Who would stand up there, essentially, you know, expose yourselves to the world and, you know, and take the abuse, especially these days with the blogs, that people just are vicious. Does it take a special kind of candidate to, or a special kind of person to run for office?
Well, I think when someone decides to run, they need to be they need to face the facts that everything is on the table, and that they also need to realize that, as you suggest, everyone has potential skeletons in their closet or skeletons in their closets. So you need to be aware of that, and you also have to realize that you cannot take it personal. The attacks that are out there on the easiest thing for a blogger to do is just keep typing. It's not like a print media or a newspaper where, you know, they're held to an account. They can say whatever they want. So you just have to let it roll off your back and stay focused on the reason why you're running, to try to better your community. And I think that's the differentiation that we try to convey to anyone who takes the mantle of running for public office.
But thin skin is not a good trait for a candidate.
You will never survive. Sure. You will never survive.
Tom, does the committee vet candidates?
Well, to some degree.
Look at that stuff.
What we do is we talk to people. We have training seminars for people who are interested in running for local elections, et cetera. And we talk about the idea that now at this day and age that you can't run for office without people looking into your record and to your past and to your personal life, and they'll run history record checks. And so we suggest to people that you need to make sure that you know what's going to come out and that you're okay with it coming out, because it will. It will come out. And whether it should or not, that's another whole debate. I mean, does it really impact on someone's ability to govern or to be an elected official based on, you know, this or that? I can give you an example. Personally, I ran for Bethlehem City Council a year ago, and I got a call from a blogger saying, I'm going to run with a story about you and how you were convicted of something. And I was completely taken aback, because I've never been convicted of anything. And he says, oh, yeah, we have this information, and we're going to run with it. And I said, well, before you run with it, you might want to check. And I actually said, I didn't know this. My name's fairly common. Hmm. Someone by the same name as me had a charge out of Lancaster County so many years ago, but they dug, they found, and they were ready to put it out there. So, yeah, you have to be ready to understand if you're going to run for public office, even at the local level, school board or city council or county council or executive, whatever, people on the other side are going to be looking into you. They're going to be Google searching you. They're going to be, perhaps, depending on the level of office, hiring opposition research people to dig further.
That's a good approach, to just deny that you're that person. So if there's another Alan Jennings, that I could direct all the hate comments on the.
Well, I actually checked in that case. The date of birth was wrong, and et cetera. Yeah. And I certainly know that, as of having been a prosecutor in both Montgomery counties and Northampton counties, that certainly Mr. Morganelli would have never hired me had I had been convicted of anything. So.
So are you both endorsing candidates in the primary?
No.
No.
Neither of you are.
Right.
Because I always thought Republicans tended to, Democrats not.
The county committee, for Northampton County Democratic Committee, we do not endorse candidates in the primary, period. That's just over the past, since I've been there anyway.
Okay.
In Northampton County, the Republican Party does not do that. County to county, though, I think there are differences between county, and I do believe in other counties there may be endorsements. Like, for instance, the congressional district, the 15th, which has now been shifted and goes all the way out to Dauphin County and Lebanon County.
Yeah,
I had the opportunity to go out to some of their county meetings during the spring before the primaries, and some of those counties didn't endorse and some did. So it's really a county-by-county decision.
Well, you know, character issues are always important, and one character I want to bring to everybody's attention is a guy sitting over there pushing the buttons and moving the gadgets and stuff like that and keeping me from making a complete fool of myself, and that's Ray Schwab, who's been a great volunteer in the studio helping me doing all these shows. So, Ray, I want to take just a quick minute to thank you. communicating the issue, you know, how we sell our story is increasingly important. I mean, it's always been important, but it just seems to get, you know, more and more important. There's a huge amount of money being spent. There are all kinds of communications mechanisms some of which are kind of sinister and nasty, you know, blogs and Twitter and all those kinds of things. Walt, let me kind of direct this at you. If there is, and I said earlier, I'm a liberal and I'm a registered Democrat, but I think the Democrats, when you think about it, the Democrats are sort of thought of as the party of the working people, Republicans as these, you know, fat cat corporates, you know, CEO types, which means that there's, you know, theoretically 1% of them and 99% of the others, and yet Democrats, you know, don't have a 99% win-loss record. And it seems to me that Republicans are just better than Democrats are at communicating the issues and communicating the message.
Yeah, let's see. If you take a look at the current mediums that we're using for communication, radio, okay, and talk radio in particular, I mean, is 90%, maybe 95% controlled by conservatives and or right wing. So, I mean, people hear this hour after hour after hour. That's effective messaging. Let's face it. Same in a print media, it's a little different. But we see that fewer people read, more people concentrate on television, and therefore that is ripe for spending a lot of money to get your message across. And again, if people hear things often enough, sooner they think it's they might think it's true, where it is really not. But I think that the Democrats, let's take Ed Rendell as an example. There's a gentleman who took governing seriously, okay? The same way that a lot of Democrats, they take governing seriously. They know the government has a place in our society, and they try to do the best they can, and a lot of times very successful. Some of the folks on the other side say government's the problem, and unfortunately, in my opinion, they prove it every time they get into power. They don't necessarily follow through in governing properly, but they get into different things that people didn't vote them in for. So, but the messaging, you're absolutely right. Conservatives rule the airwaves on talk radio. So that's a done deal. You just can't.
But liberals can buy the same airwaves, really, and we've got – you know, Obama's got as much money in the bank as Romney, but the mess. I mean, like, for example, you know, Ronald Reagan, Peacekeeper missile. This was a missile system that violated every treaty, right? The Clear Skies Initiative. Most environmentalists would call it a polluting initiative.
Yeah.
Death taxes, yeah. Things like that. The liberals, the Democrats, come up with a health care initiative that they were elected to create. They call it the public option, and as I said before we came on the air, you might as well have called it the government boondoggle.
Right.
If it were Republicans and it was Frank Luntz, they would have called it Healthy America. Who's opposed to Healthy America?
Right.
I made the same point earlier, Tom, and you took exception.
Well, I reject your premise that the Republicans are the rich and the Democrats are the 99%, because, in fact, if you look at the statistics and the numbers of the elected officials at Congress, for instance, in the House and Senate, the more wealthy of the representatives are the Democrats.
Tom, if I didn't sound like I was joking, that was my intent.
No, I understand that, but I think in jest there's always some truth, and I think that that is the message that the Democrat Party has always put out there. They are the establishment rich people, and they're the corporate fat cats that want people to die and suffer and and breathe polluted air. And reality is the Republican Party is working class people. In fact, in Pennsylvania, the Republican registration, you're talking about people that are across the board. You're not talking about only the corporate CEOs that are registered Republicans. So first of all, in terms of that, in terms of the message, you know, yeah, talk radio is something that does get out a more conservative message. But that is, like you said, it's free market. And the people in America have opted to listen to and pay the advertisers that support those radios. I know the liberals and Al Gore tried to establish a network that didn't work. So,
now we have some very successful folks on the left who are like Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, great voices for the left, great voices for progressives. But the bottom line is the majority of radio is controlled by the right wing and the Republicans. But I want to get back to one thing. One of my pet peeves, when people call the Democrat Party, it's the Democratic Party.
Yeah, is that a diss or something?
It's a messaging tool, too. It's a messaging tool.
What makes Democrats sound more,
It's the same way that they demonize liberals. And you hear that it's often they say the Democrat Party. No, it's the Democratic Party. They don't like to because I think they think that the word democratic denotes democracy. So they try to diss it. But it's a messaging tool. And again, it probably comes from that gentleman, Mr. Luntz, that you referred to before. But
the guy is a brilliant messenger.
Oh, absolutely. He just happened to be a great human being.
Yeah, I know. But he really is a brilliant messenger. Let's get to the races, so to speak. We have a real live race at the top of the ticket. And when you go down from there, it gets harder and harder to call it races. Let's operate on the assumption that you believe that your candidate is going to win. Let's go just race by race down through the list and give me a quick explanation why you think, Tom, that Mitt Romney is going to win this election.
Well, I'm not so sure what's going to happen in Pennsylvania. I think he has a shot at winning in Pennsylvania. But I do think overall that when we get to the election day and the economy is the number one driving force behind why people will vote, and the truth will come out and has come out about, you can sit there and talk, and your talking points are, let's not drive the car back into the ditch, but the reality is a Democratic Party, the Democrats took over the both houses of Congress in 2006, and they drove the economy through the legislative process for the last 2 years of the Bush administration. So in a sense, they've had 6 years of controlling the government. And even in 2010, when the Republicans took over the House, the Senate still controls the Democratic Party still controls the Senate and also the presidency. And it's been over 3 years since the Senate passed the budget.
Walt Garvin, why is Barack Obama going to win this election?
Well, the president is working very hard. His campaign is working hard. Our volunteers down here in the trenches are working very hard. But I think that the original premise of the program, that with Labor Day, the start to the push to the run up to the election, and with the conventions having, had an opportunity to present their platforms, there couldn't have been a starker contrast between the Republican National Convention and the Democratic National Convention. I was lucky enough to be there as a delegate for the 17th Congressional District, so I witnessed everything firsthand. And I want to tell you that the American people saw a stark contrast. Real results, not just smoke and mirrors, but the record of the president over the past 3.5 years, what's building on a future, building on a foundation that we can move forward into the future. And I think that that has resonated with people. Conversely, they didn't hear any specifics from the candidates or anyone in that entire 3 days that the Republicans were in Tampa. And now the results are showing that. Tom referred to Pennsylvania. Looks like it's going to go with President Obama right now. Well, right now that's the case because people say, you know what? The things I heard out of the DNC make sense, and I'm looking and I'm reading and I'm peeling away the onion. These make sense, whereas the stuff they said the week before in Tampa, there was nothing there.
But it's weird, though, because that I guess makes Pennsylvania a blue state. It is anything but a blue state.
It's not a blue state.
The governor is a Republican. The Senate is Republican. The House is Republican in Pennsylvania. It's a weird thing that Obama's up.
Well, it's not so weird, actually, when you think about the voter registration numbers. It's 1.1 million advantage of the Democratic Party over the Republicans in terms of voter registration. And when you look across the state, you have the typically, as we look at it, as a Republican T, the northern tier in the central part of the state, which is usually pretty conservative.
What James Carville called Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Alabama in between.
Right, disparagingly, disrespecting everybody who happened not to live in Philadelphia or Pittsburgh. But and then you have really what drives Pennsylvania for so many of these elections seems to be, in my opinion, the four suburban counties of Philadelphia, Chester, Montgomery, Bucks, and Delaware, and then the Lehigh Valley,
yeah,
Northampton, and Lehigh counties. Those six counties carry such a large percentage of the overall population. Four of those counties tend to be a little more Republican than Democrat in terms of voter registration. But
they're also fairly liberal Republicans.
But they're more like a lot of people call rhinos in that sense. So they have flipped back and forth. And in Montgomery County in 1980 was touted by Ronald Reagan as the the best Republican county in the entire nation.
It's
but yet, just last year, the Republicans lost the row in that county for the first time.
Arguably, the most liberal state legislator in Pennsylvania, Dalen Leach, comes out of Montgomery County.
Actually, yeah, King of Prussia area, and he's extremely liberal and
A great voice, for and a great leader.
Former
in the
Lehigh Valley guy.
Yeah.
Let's go to Casey, and you know, it's hardly worth our time because it's hard to imagine at this point that Bob Casey loses. Is it possible for your candidate to win in this race? I can't think of his name.
Tom Smith.
Smith, right.
Tom Smith. I think it's possible. I do see your point. You know, full disclosure, I actually went to law school with Robert Casey and at the Catholic University of America. We graduated in 1988. His father was governor of Pennsylvania at the time. He was our keynote speaker in our graduation. And I say that, he's got a lot of money. He's got the full support of the Obama administration. He's got a 1.1 or 2 million voter registration advantage. And
that's a tough one for
all that stacks up. But, you know, the same numbers played out just 2 years ago when Sestak and Toomey ran. And ultimately, although they were saying Sestak was going to win and it came down very close at the end, I don't know that Casey's just going to walk away with this, because ultimately he has voting record that is 98% tied to Obama. And if the Pennsylvania residents don't like the Obama voting record, then they're not going to like Casey's voting record either. He's really been absent for the last 5 years, and now, just now that he's running, all of a sudden we're seeing him again. So
we're going to run out of time because I've still got a lot of ground to cover. Let me, and by the way, this is WDIY, Listener Supported Community Public Radio. I'm Alan Jennings. My host tonight, my guest tonight, Walt Garvin, Northampton County Democratic Committee Chairman; Tom Carroll, Northampton County Republican Committee Vice Chair. Real quickly, is there what do you think is the most competitive House race? We're going to save Congress for the next segment, but just to get through the House and Senate quickly in Pennsylvania, what race do you think is the most competitive race in the Lehigh Valley's House state House delegation?
In Northampton County right now, I think that the voters have a certain amount of voter remorse from electing Republicans to the state House for the first time in four decades. So Joe Capozzola running up in the 137th, Leslie Altieri in the 138th. Those are very competitive, because I think that the voters up there are going to say, hey, wait, we elected these people to Harrisburg, and what did we get? We got a voter ID bill that is potentially going to be affecting over 9%, close to 10% of voters, which is voter suppression. So I think that those two races in particular are good. Kevin Dealey here in the 133rd.
You think Justin Simmons is vulnerable?
Right, right. Very vulnerable.
Marsha Hahn, Joe Emmerich, safe.
I think you're going to find out. I think Joe Capozzola is running a great race against Emmerich, and I think that you're going to find out that Joe doesn't have anything to run on, and Emmerich, and that Joe Capozzola is going to be, he's working very hard, he's going to be successful.
Tom Carroll, who do you put into play? Whose Democratic seat can you guys take?
I don't know that there's really going to be a shift in any of them, and quite honestly, I think we do have a lot of incumbency issues that go with the local elections, and I know they're attacking Justin Simmons because the teachers union, because of his position of saying, you know, this unsustainable taxing on our property to support the school system and some other way to look at it, and he's adopted that as one of his issues, and so they're going after him with the school board. So but I think Justin is going to prevail in that case, and I think Joe Emmerich is as well. And I don't know that there's any particular Democrat seats that are going to be
Democratic.
Democratic. I apologize.
That's okay. Carroll of the Republic Party.
Republican. It's funny because you hear so many people in the Democratic Party actually refer to it as the Democrat Party. You hear it out of their mouth as well.
Never me.
We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to WDIY, listener-supported community public radio, Lehigh Valley Discourse. We're talking the election. Stay with us.
Mess today. I know we've all got different ways. the dues we've got to pay, still the same.
Hi, this is Rebecca Walls, Development Director here at WDIY. We're gearing up for our fall membership drive, scheduled October 12th through the 20th. But once again, we're giving you the opportunity to buy back several on-air pledge days. If we can raise $12,000 by October 10th, we'll push back the start of our pledge drive by 3 days. We're almost halfway there. Please consider giving today. It's quick, easy, and safe. Plus, it'll give us all more of what we love to hear on WDIY.
Everyday people.
You know, I have lots of fun putting the musical interludes in this show, but sometimes it's hard for me to keep up with the points that I wanted to make. The Dave Mason song shouldn't have took more than you gave. I really want to talk about taxes. And the Sly and the Family Stone song, Everyday People, I really want to talk about the shifting demographics in America and how that affects the future of the two parties. But before we do that, let's talk about the two congressional races that Lehigh Valley voters have a shot at. I think it stinks that we broke up this seat, and I think a lot of people share that view. I got to tell you, Charlie Dent is an old friend of mine, and he's been a solid supporter of some of the things that our agency does. And so, I'm staying out of this one altogether. Rick Dougherty is an old friend, too. I don't want what you want to say about the 15th district race. Rick hasn't raised a lot of money. Charlie's got a well-oiled campaign machine. He's got good name recognition. Everybody calls Charlie Dent a nice guy. What do we do with the 15th congressional district?
Nothing. Well, voters have to realize that the intent of the redistricting was to protect the incumbents, whether it was the entire Republican Party, but it was driven pretty much out of Harrisburg. The state house and the state senate, along with the governor's folks, they said, and the congressional leaders, they said, okay, how can we carve these up to protect Lou Barletta, to protect Charlie Dent? And that's what the bottom line is here. Now, the state courts threw out the state redistricting, state house redistricting, and they threw out the state senate redistricting because those two terms were in the election law. Had congressional seats been in that law too, they would have been thrown out as well because, as one of my great legislators said, this is the most egregious example of gerrymandering he has seen in his 28 years of public service.
It probably makes Charlie Dent safe.
Well, I would think that was the intent of the redistricting.
What about the 17th district?
Well, I would go back to the 15th district and reject the premise that this was done with some kind of mean-spirited, we're going to only protect Republicans, because if you look at it
protect incumbents.
Incumbents, which in this case, of course, it was the Republican Party that controlled the House of Representatives that passed that drew the lines. But you look at the 15th congressional district, which was primarily Northampton, Lehigh County, and then a little bit in Montgomery County, and now it's shifted where it's only a part of Northampton County, none of Montgomery County, out to Berks, Dauphin, Lebanon. If Charlie Dent was motivated behind that shift out of a Lehigh Valley where he was very well known, very popular, very well liked, versus going out to a part of the state where nobody knows him and a part of the state that has the Republican Party is much more conservative, many more Tea Party organization people there. Charlie Dent, when you looked at him versus Holden, was rated oftentimes very moderate and not a conservative in many ways. So if he was the one manipulating that, foolish and silly. It didn't happen that way because he didn't put himself into a seat that ultimately would in the long term not be supportive of his agenda.
The Republican strongholds nonetheless, Tom. Those Lebanon County, absolutely Republican strongholds. And the parts, the intent of the redistricting was to protect the incumbents. Charlie's the incumbent. Lou Barlett is the incumbent. Mission accomplished. Let's just face it.
I totally disagree.
You don't have to agree with it, but that's the reality of the situation.
Right. You say it's the reality. Doesn't mean it is the reality.
No, it is the reality.
What happens in the 17th district?
I thought that was a very interesting primary on the other side, in that Congressman Holden, who also sort of, when you rate his voting record, it was very similar to Charlie Dent's. In fact, I think
he's
in some ways he was more conservative in in some ways
more conservative than Charlie.
In some ways, at least that's what they the numbers would say, and the primary voters in that new district that sort of meanders up to near Scranton, et cetera.
76% new. 76% new for Tim Holden. Now, the John Baer, the political reporter from Philadelphia Inquirer, Daily News, said that Tim Holden was the quintessential representative. He voted the way his constituents wanted him to vote. He predicted that Tim would survive the race, but with a 76% new district with left-leaning areas, and nobody's more left than me, that wasn't in the cards. And when you saw some of the money that came in from the outside, and I hope we get into this crazy outside money, $500,000 was spent by this outfit called the Campaign for Primary Accountability. Anybody, and I got plenty of that stuff.
Gotta love it, huh?
Well, here it is. The founder, the executive director of the Campaign for Primary Accountability is the founder of the Tea Party Patriots in Virginia. The money from that organization comes from five people who were trying to overturn the Affordable Health Care Act. So in this case, politics does indeed make strange bedfellows. They were feeding left people, they're making Tim look like the demon, and they were very successful. Now, Matt Carey is a great candidate, but again, this gerrymandering, the Republicans will never be able to compete in the 17th Congressional District again.
But if you're a liberal, Walt, you ought to be thrilled because, you know, Tim Holden was as good a Republican as any Republican I know.
Well, here's the thing. In Washington, here's the devious part behind the primary for accountability. They realize that seniority rules in Washington, D.C. So now they took a 20-year congressman who would have been head of a lot of committees, who now would have voted the way his new constituents wanted him to vote. He's out. So and unfortunately, that's the reality of the situation.
I don't necessarily agree that the 17th district has become, in the new format, the liberal. It's Democrat, more Democrat in numbers.
Democratic.
But
it's one of my pet peeves.
You can have your pet peeves. The numbers may improve, but I don't see those people that live in those regions in between Scranton and like Monroe County and Northampton counties, et cetera, as being overwhelmingly liberal. A lot of them are Catholic. There are large numbers of Catholics. There's a large number of probably socially relatively conservative people. Many people who are, I'm a Democratic Party member because my father was, because I was a coal miner, because I worked in the steel.
Yeah.
And they're not really liberal. Yeah. So I don't know that liberal conservative really plays into it as much, and so I don't know that means that the Republicans can never win this.
It is a Democratic leaning district. Period. I mean, you guys will never put up somebody in that district who can compete. The person right now is a Tea Party person. He's not going to get more than 10%, 15% of the vote. That's just the way it is.
And Charlie Dent will be the member from 15th Congressional District as long as he wants to.
I'm hoping otherwise. I've been challenging Mr. Dent for years, and Rick Doherty's doing a great job, and I'm hopefully that we'll be able to, as Tom said, take advantage of Charlie's unknown status out in the western part of the district.
I think he's not going to have a problem with that, but I think Lorraine Cummings is a very good candidate. She's hardworking, she's honest, and she is conservative. She was a business person who got tired of the overarching regulations that started affecting her ability to survive, and she stepped up. And yeah, she's probably going to have a hard time because she doesn't come with any funding base. So
let's just talk about, for just a quick minute, because I want to move on to some other things. The demographic changes in our country. You know, the point of using Sly and his family stones, everyday people, you know, that whole line about there was a white one that didn't like the black one, living with it, you know. America is becoming darker. It is
more people of color,
Latino.
Right? More people of color, right?
It is, and it seems to me that if that's the case, the Democratic Party has a future in protecting Latino interests, which would be immigration issues, for example. Republican Party has run on a pretty strident position on immigration. What does the future Republican Party, when you look out down the line, what does the Republican Party look like down the line? They talk about the angry white man, and that's a diminishing population. How do you, as a Republican Party, sustain yourselves with the changing demographics? How does that work for you when you look out there?
I think that the Democratic Party has been much more effective in its demagoguery of this issue and trying to paint Republicans as the old white people. And the Republicans have to address that. They have to come forward with a steady, you know, these are our values. This is what we believe in, and we believe in limited government. And I believe the conservative message of the Republican Party is in line with many of these groups of people that you talk about, like the Hispanics, or many of them are Catholic, and
And Pentecostal and anti-choice because of that. A lot of them are not particularly receptive to gay rights.
Right. And
a very entrepreneurial population. And certainly
the Cuban population in Florida is one example of a very hardworking people that are actually in large numbers of Republicans in that group. The Republicans are not able to address these different groups of people, but I think they do have to recognize that they have been demonized and incorrectly painted as people who hate everybody but white people, and that's just not the case. And you look at he talked about just what happened at the conventions, and we talked about it wasn't a white party putting on a brown face. These were actually elected officials, governors of states like New Mexico, senators from Florida who were Hispanic and Mexican and Cuban descent, and they've been elected by the people of their states as Republicans.
But
so
the demographics show that, you know, what, 98% of African Americans are Democratic, 70% plus of Latinos. I mean, so it's a lot harder for Republicans to put that face out there than it is for Democrats.
Especially in the plank of is anti-immigration. Let's face it. The Republican plank from the RNC is anti-immigration. The candidate running for president for the Republican Party says self-deportation is the way to go. Now, I want to get back to this. All Latinos are hardworking, not just the Cubans in Florida. The Latinos here in the Lehigh Valley, a vibrant community. The Latinos in every community, they're all hardworking, and they are voting because they're voting their economic interests. They're not voting because of their parents were coal miners. I can assure you that. But they are hardworking, and they see who represents their values. When someone says self-deportation is the way to go, that is not going to warm anyone's heart in the community that we're talking about.
Well, and again, I have to reject his premise that the Republican Party is anti-immigration. It is
not.
It is not anti-immigration.
No, it's in the plank.
And if you could not interrupt me and let me finish my sentence, it would be greatly appreciated. The
Good
fact
point,
is,
Ball.
The fact is that we are not anti-legal immigration. We are a country of immigrants from the very beginning all the way through our history, and we all recognize that. And every single story of every single person that stepped up to that platform at that convention talked about how their family came here and built a better life for their family and their children. So we have been a party of immigrants because that's what we all are as Americans.
And then their candidate said self-deport. So the bottom line here is, Tom, you can sugarcoat it anyway, and I apologize for interrupting, but when the candidate says self-deportation, that's not lost on me. It's not lost on the people in that community, our community.
Democrats, I think, are vulnerable on taxes. We get, you know, Democrats get whacked all the time. Republicans are very effective at labeling Democrats as tax and spend liberals. How do you get yourselves out of that label?
Right now, for me, I think it's clear to the American people when they see that their candidate is not releasing his own tax. He doesn't want to talk about his taxes. He doesn't want to talk about his tax rate. They don't want to talk about their tax plan for if and when they win the election. It's crystal clear. What taxes are they going to raise? What taxes are they going to reduce? Right now, they said they want to maintain tax cuts for the wealthy. We've seen what that has done. That is part of the problem. Tax cuts that aren't paid for are a future tax increase. Milton Friedman, thank you.
Tom?
Again, they just throw that language out with no basis in reality. The Obama, it was 2 years ago when he himself said that we have to keep these tax rates and keep what they keep calling the Bush tax rates. Reality is we're in for an economic implosion because of their position with taxes. He passed a budget that not one person in the Senate or House voted for, yes. And in the meantime, he said 2 years ago, oh, we have to keep these tax rates, but now we're going to get rid of them. And they keep saying, oh, it's the tax on the rich. It's reality. It's taxes for everybody's going to go up. And as John F. Kennedy did when he lowered taxes, as Ronald Reagan did when he lowered taxes, and even your hero, Rendell, when he was mayor of Philadelphia, when he lowered taxes, economic activity increased, money to the treasuries increased. And the only reason why they had problems with their deficits when they had more money coming in was because the Democrats controlled the legislation and they never controlled their spending.
Now who's got the talking points?
That was a nice job, Tom. It seems to me that this entire country has moved right. The fulcrum, I mean, when Barack Obama, I talked to a guy who called the Obama administration a Marxist cabal. You know, my view is that that Obama is a technocratic, professorial moderate. I've been very, very disappointed with a lot of his actions. His health care initiative was called socialist when it was very similar to the proposals Richard Nixon and Mitt Romney proposed when Mitt Romney was governor. Tom, the Republican Party in particular, the Tea Party has been a very strong influence there. What amazes me is you don't see Democrats throwing out their incumbents to get them to move left, except in the Holden campaign. You see it all the time in a Republican side. I've heard a committee chairman say they're not so concerned about getting their people reelected. They have a point to make. Do you have like a struggle going on with the Republican Party right now about its for lack of a better word, its soul, its direction issue-wise?
There's no concerted, there's no one voice in the Republican Party. Yeah, you're right. There's people who are, let's get Republicans elected for the sake of just getting a Republican elected. And then there are those people who are saying that the actual Republican values of limited government need to be the driving force behind. And it's better to get somebody elected that is conservative than to get a rhino elected. And that has been the dichotomy in the last couple of years.
The Tea Party, I think, is a party of intransigent. They do not move. They're like, it's our way or the highway. There's no compromise. This is their plank. No compromise. Now, any legislation is based on the art of compromise. That is the nature of politics itself, the art of compromise. But they're intransigent, and they'll do anything to frustrate the forces otherwise. As an example, and I'll be real quick with this one. When the president took over in January, the Republican leaders, Eric Cantor, said, we will not do anything to help this president along, period. They became labeled the party of no, and it has stayed that way. Any legislation that got put forward for the better of this country has all been done by the president and the Democratic Congress.
Tom, I got to leave you. You have the last parting shot.
That's exactly what they did when Bush was president. They said, no, and he's evil, and they demonized him, and they threatened him, and it was the same thing. So there's to label the Tea Party that way is just ridiculous.
But he got No Child Left Behind with Democrats' votes. He got Iraq with Democratic votes. He got his tax cuts with Democratic votes. Anyhow, we've got to wrap up. This was the latest episode of Lehigh Valley Discourse. I had Walt Garvin, the chairman of the Northampton County Democratic Committee, Tom Carroll, the vice chair of the Northampton County Republican Committee. Gentlemen, thanks to both of you.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you,
WDIY.
Good discourse. Thank you very much for listening.